11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running, liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour, liftoff on Apollo 11.
How's it going, folks? It is the week of February 16th, 2015, and you are listening to episode 2 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. That's right, we survived the first week. We made it, and we're ready for our second show. My name is Alan. You can find me on Twitter at Slip. That's Slip with 5 I's. We had a really good first week for the show. This first episode featuring Big Papi, Peg City, launched on February 10th and received quite a bit of positive feedback online. I know that we had about 100 downloads of the show. Don't know how many people turn around and listen to it, but that's still a number that surpassed my expectations. And I do know that some of you were either kind enough to listen to the show or kind enough to pretend that you listened to the show and send us some very positive feedback. So thank you again to Rodell for participating in the first show, and thank you to everybody who listened. We got some new artwork for the show that was provided by my boy Poops McKenzie on Twitter, and you can see that artwork at our Twitter handle, which is at Beyond the Handle on Twitter. The show is now on iTunes, so if you'd like to download the show to your podcasts app or to your iTunes account, just do a search for Beyond the Handle at the iTunes store, and we should pop up there for you. So that is also very exciting. Also, we have joined the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is a network devoted to bringing the best podcasts in Winnipeg to you. And they have a website, garbagehillnetwork.com, where you can get information about all of the shows on the network, along with links to download local podcast content. And a lot of it is great. A couple of shows that I've been listening to include Witch Police Radio, the No One Is Safe podcast, which recently launched in the last couple of weeks, Winnipeg Hockey Talk, and Couch Surfing. But there are, I'm looking at the site right now, there are about a dozen podcasts right now listed on the site, and Beyond the Handle is one of them. So very, very excited to be joining that network of podcasts as well, and encourage you to go and check out some great local content for your ears. In terms of today's show, I'm also very excited because I was able to sit down with two guests at the same time. That's right. I have the technology to do that. What do you know? I spoke with at PCW Andrew as well as at Skinartia. They came into the studio to talk wrestling as well as to talk about Winnipeg's nude modeling scene. I knew that we had a local pro wrestling. Didn't realize that we had local nude modeling, though I really should have. I'd need to get my head out of the clouds and realize that, of course, a city like Winnipeg is going to have all sorts of different scenes. And so we get the inside scoop a little bit on both of them. I'm going to start by talking with PCW Andrew. He is promoting PCW's 13th anniversary show, which is on Saturday, February 28th at Doubles Fun Club. We're going to talk about his experience in terms of booking a professional wrestling promotion and everything that goes with it. So we'll start with that interview, and then we will speak to Skinartia a little bit later on and talk about small town living and nude modeling. And of course, I have to bring the conversation back to pro wrestling. Let's start with PCW Andrew on the Beyond the Handle podcast. Okay, I'm very excited to have my first dual guests on the Beyond the Handle podcast. I have Andrew, also known as PCW Andrew on Twitter, and I have Skinartia from Twitter as well. I hope I'm saying that correctly.
Most people say Skinartia, but it's my made-up word, so it's actually Skinartia.
Skinartia? Yeah. That's good. I'm glad I got it right without
without
being corrected, even though I checked. So, I'm going to start by talking with Andrew because he is going to discuss a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. If you've seen what I've posted on Twitter, Andrew is the promoter, the owner?
Yes.
The owner of PCW Premier Championship Wrestling, which is a promotion here in Winnipeg that is celebrating its 13th anniversary this month.
You got it.
So what event are you putting on to celebrate?
It's our 13th anniversary spectacular. It's February 28th. It's a Saturday night at Doubles Fun Club in Winnipeg. And we'll be celebrating our 13th anniversary. Kenny Omega will be in town for that. And a whole host of wrestlers. So a lot of the local wrestlers and some guys from out of town as well.
Kenny Omega has kind of made a name for himself in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's right. Kenny Omega is from Winnipeg, and he wrestled for us back from when he was 18 years old. He's been with us the entire time, and we knew from seeing him at his youngest days in wrestling that he was going to be a big star. He's wrestled for WWE, Ring of Honor. He's wrestled all over the United States, Canada, the UK, and Japan, and now with New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is the largest promotion in Japan, and people would refer to it as the second largest promotion in the world behind WWE.
And they put on some fantastic pay-per-views, which are now becoming more available here in North America to view, correct?
Yeah, they are putting on some amazing events. Their wrestling is very, very good, especially if you miss the days of really pure wrestling and really athletic wrestling. That's what they do. They have an online service called New Japan World, which is just like WWE Network, and you can subscribe to that. It's about $10 a month, and you can watch that here. And they just had a pay-per-view they actually aired live in North America. Jeff Jarrett actually put that deal together, so we had people over, and we're watching New Japan Pro Wrestling and watching Kenny Omega at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
That was over New Year's, is that correct?
January 5th.
Yeah, yes, just into the New Year. January 3rd or 5th. Yeah.
And I heard the reviews on Dave Meltzer's show, and it was like, you know, multiple four and a half star matches, just like an unbelievable event.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It's different than American wrestling, but the fact that they had the pay-per-view and they had Jim Ross calling it, so, you know, he called the show to the American fans, so that kind of got you into it and explained a lot of what was going on.
So I want to talk about the realities of booking pro wrestling, but, you know, I want to just kind of skip past the whole, like, is it real, is it fake kind of argument. You know, I think at this point, if you don't know what the realities are with professional wrestling in 2015, you need to get out from under a rock.
Right.
But there is still a lot about it that's real in terms of the athleticism, the performance aspect, injuries, what happens behind the scenes. So as a promoter, actually, before I ask about you as a promoter, did you used to perform?
Not really, not officially. I have wrestled a few matches, but not as, say, a regular wrestler, just as my sort of on-screen role, in quotes, as the owner of the company. So I got in the ring, I don't know, 5 or 6 times, maybe.
You Vince McMahoned it, basically.
Yeah, like Vince McMahon, you know, and Shane McMahon and Eric Bischoff, where they wrestled a few times, but aren't really wrestlers.
Did you train?
I started training actually in 2001, which is how I was trying to get involved in the business. And then I realized I didn't really want to be a wrestler after I was going through the training, because it's very difficult. And I'm really not athletic. So, what I really want to do is get into the booking and, like the writing the stories of wrestling. And so I trained for a few weeks, and then I stopped and I got involved in the other aspects of wrestling. But then when I was going to actually wrestle, what we did is the person I wrestled, my first match was Greg Roman, who is a good friend of mine. He's retired now, but local fans will know who Greg Roman is.
Okay.
And so what we did is we got together several times and just actually ran through the match in the ring with nobody in the building several times and to perfect what we were going to do.
How'd it go?
I was really good, actually. That first one was probably the best one I ever did, because it was a hardcore match and we had planned several big spots. And working with Greg Roman is really easy because – not to say he's lazy, but you know, he wants to keep it simple, right? And yeah, that was really easy. So he showed me how to keep it simple. We had like 3 or 4 big spots. But then what happened is the fans were used to seeing that. So when I did it again, it was like, how do you top it? And so every match I had since, it was, we need more blood or we need more crazy spots. And I broke my heel. I broke my knee.
Those are 2 separate matches. Happened on the same leg.
Yeah, multiple stitches. You know, like, so every match it kind of got worse. And that's why, as I've gotten older, I shy away from doing it all, because I know that if I do it, it's going to have to be kind of crazy. And I always say I think I got one more in me with somebody, but maybe when I'm in more shape and ready to leave it all out there.
You hear that a lot in the business. I got one more in me. You think I can do one more.
You never really leave the business. Like, that's why people sometimes say, well, why doesn't Hulk Hogan retire? Well, because you love it and you can never leave. It's just something you love.
How did you go about, like, starting up a promotion?
Well, so in 2001, when I was going to train to be a wrestler, was because the venue that I worked at, I worked as security at a bar called the Palladium Nightclub on Pembina Highway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nostalgia kicking in now.
And I'm thinking of Saturday night's 90s or 80s night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was great. And it was Top Rope Championship Wrestling was a local promotion run by Bobby Jay, and he brought wrestling there. And that was my introduction to local wrestling. And so I started training, and I became really good friends with a guy named Mike Davidson, who was the booker of TRCW Wrestling. And he actually had a falling out with Bobby and ended up leaving TRCW. So he always wanted to start his own promotion. And I said, well, I can help you. I can help you with putting a business plan together. I can help you with getting a venue, which was the Palladium.
Okay.
And so together we started PCW, and we hooked up with a guy, a local businessman named John Newen, who was a wrestling fan and was willing to put some money behind it. And that's how we started.
And it started as PCW, like that was the original name?
Yeah, that was the name. Mike had a different idea for the name, actually. The way we came up with that name was we were arguing over the name, and Mike wanted it to be called something else. I didn't have any ideas, and I actually dreamt it. And people will say that's crazy, but I had a dream.
Okay.
I had a dream that it was called Premier Wrestling Alliance. And so on my original business plan that I still have, I entitled it Premier Wrestling Alliance. And when I suggested that name to Mike and a couple of the guys, they didn't want to use the word alliance because WWE and WCW had just done the invasion angle.
Okay,
which
yeah.
was called the alliance, and yeah. it was a terrible angle.
Yeah.
And so they said, you can't use the alliance because everybody will think of this terrible angle that they ran. And so I said, well, let's just call it Premier Championship Wrestling then. And that's how it was born.
So you went from the dream to just whatever.
Keep the word premier. I love the word premier because it doesn't force you into any sort of geographic location or anything like that, right?
And how did you go about recruiting talent?
We raided TRCW.
Okay.
Mike had worked there, and we had friends. Well, Mike had lots of friends that worked there, and I got to know a lot of the guys, and that was the best promotion in town at the time. And so we had a meeting, and we invited all the guys we wanted from TRCW and made them an offer. And they liked the vision we pitched them. And so all of them but one came and worked for us.
Was it ugly? Like, did you get threatened? No,
because you know something? In wrestling, it's people screw each other a lot, and people will jump from one promotion to another because they get promised a title match, or they get promised to work a big name, or whatever it is. So guys jump back and forth all the time. And we, at the time, in local wrestling, you know, a lot of wrestlers weren't even getting paid at all, and we had promised, you know, no matter what happens, at least we'll give you a few bucks at the show. And that was one of them. And just the vision of using guys in a different way, not to crap on Bobby Jay's vision with TRCW at all, because it was a great promotion mm-hmm. for a long, long time. But we had a different vision, and the guys liked it because they all came.
So tell me, what is the vision for?
Well, the vision at that time was that we were going to try to do it more professionally and bigger, and we had money behind us. And we wanted to do these big shows. And our first official show was in Winnipeg at the Investors Group Athletic Center at the University of Manitoba.
Oh, wow.
We had 1,700 people, which is a record still to this day. It was unheard of for independent wrestling in Winnipeg. We had Eddie Guerrero in the main event. We had the Honky Tonk Man and Brutus Beefcake. And we had tons of mainstream advertising. We spent probably $25,000 on just that one show.
Wow.
And that was the vision. And then we had a show. You know, we did regular weekly shows in Winnipeg at our venue, the Palladium, which became the Stratosphere. While we were there. And then our next big show was at CanWest Global Park, at Shaw Park. We rented that, and we had the Road Warriors and Buff Bagwell.
I was at that show.
Really?
Yeah, I was at that show.
That was a terrible show.
I have to tell you, the guy that wrestled Buff Bagwell, I think his name is Chris.
Chris Paris, class
Chris X. Paris. He went to university with me and my buddies, mm-hmm. and we had a backyard wrestling promotion.
Oh,
and Chris talked to us repeatedly about joining, and for whatever reason, it never happened. So then we showed up at CanWest Global Park, and fucking Chris, who is the convict, is the character he wanted to be. We were like, Chris, the convict's coming out, and he's wrestling Buff Bagwell.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris was great, actually. That was his first match back from an injury, so. I can remember that when Mike Davidson said to him in the back, he said, whatever you do, don't do that Tajiri elbow you do where you springboard off the ropes.
Yeah.
Because he had just come back, right? And he hadn't had any tune-up matches. And so Chris did the Tajiri elbow, and he didn't hit it right. And it's all Mike. He just was going crazy about, told you not to do that elbow.
So you were probably marking out more for Chris than Buff Bagwell.
We were calling him the convict. So we were yelling at him like, you're the convict. You're not Chris Paris. You're the convict.
Did he know you guys? Did he recognize you?
No, I'm sure he did. I don't even think he heard us. Our promotion was called the Whoop-Ass Wrestling Federation. We couldn't step away from the big term of the time. This is 1997.
That's awesome.
So we were like, you couldn't make it in Whoop-Ass. But, of course, he's wrestling Buff Bagwell. So he kind of stuck it to us in the end.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple of kind of more famous names, and I want to ask about that in a second. But most of the guys in the promotion, I'm assuming, have day jobs.
Yes.
So what kind of backgrounds do a lot of the talent come from?
You know what? Really everything. Like, you know, you got guys who come from, you know, that have labor jobs. You got guys that are just students. You know, several of the guys take creative communications because I think that's,
It goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand. You're right. Like, you're a creative person. You're involved in wrestling. You're putting stuff together. You know, there's guys that have had lots of money and gone to wrestling and all walks of life.
And what do you think draws them to it?
I think it's just the love. You know, you grow up as a fan and you have a dream because you're probably watching wrestling from when you were a little kid. You know, I remember when I first watched it, my brother had it on, my older brother, and I was just a little kid, and the spectacle of it is what attracted me to it. So you grow up from a very young age loving wrestling, and then you get to a point where you see there's local wrestling and you think, wow, I can actually maybe be in wrestling. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it's an easy thing to get involved in at some capacity, right? Because it's grassroots. It's just, if you're an actor and you want to do grassroots acting, you know, there's theaters you can go to, right? And it's the same thing. So it's grassroots and you can get involved, whether or not you're a referee or a wrestler or an announcer or a booker or whatever it might be. We're open to anybody that has a desire and a love to do it. We can help you be a part of it.
Do you help with training, or do you work with any trainers locally?
We, off and on over the years, we have, Mentolo, who's a fantastic wrestler from Winnipeg, who's wrestled in Japan and Mexico and all over the United States and Canada. He was our original trainer at PCW. And, we've had other guys that have trained on and off. It's just a matter of having a place where you can have a ring stored all the time. It's difficult in Winnipeg. It's difficult to make the finances work. You need a large class, and you need students that are willing to actually pay the money to make it work on a consistent basis. And it's difficult.
So let's, I'm sure you, as someone that's in the business, you probably get sick of hearing this term, marking out, which is the term for kind of losing your shit over something for real that's happened. Who are some of the, wrestlers that you've worked with in your promotion that were kind of like you marked out when you had a opportunity to work with them?
Well, the first big name that we brought in, Eddie Guerrero. I mean, Eddie was, we kind of marked out for Eddie before we had him come in, right? Just the idea that we can actually bring this guy in. And so we brought him in, and then the experience of working with him while he was here, was unbelievable. Like, he was such an amazing guy, that all of us, just for that brief, he was only here for 24 hours, and we all had this like kinship and brotherhood with him because he was such an amazing guy. So quiet, so humble, and so giving. You know, he came in almost on no sleep. He was on a tour, and his promoter in the States kind of screwed him. He left him without a hotel or a ride, and he basically came to Winnipeg with on no sleep at all, got hassled at customs, and
just always,
you know, nice. And he said, I haven't slept in over a day and a half. But he did radio interviews for us. He did an autograph session on location at a store. He came down to the venue. We said, don't come to the venue then. Just sleep. We'll pick you up before you're... No, I want to come down and watch the guys. He watched the matches. He was engaged with the guys. And being, you know, he's... Everybody knows he was an alcoholic and had addiction issues.
Yeah.
And we had an after party at a bar. And we said, don't come. And his hotel room was in the bar. It was upstairs. And he said, no, I want to come. And, you know, he's dead tired. And he had to go to Japan like 2 days later.
Wow.
For a really big tour for him because he was trying to get back to WWE. So this Japanese tour was huge. And he came to the bar, and, you know, people were trying to buy him drinks, and took pictures, autographs to everybody. So he was amazing. And we were the last place he worked before he re-signed with WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great match. But all the guys, almost every single case of guys coming to Winnipeg, the big names, have been awesome. And you do, as a fan, you definitely mark, like Honky Tonk Man. I love the Honky Tonk Man when I was younger.
Yeah.
And he's a character. Like, he is the Honky Tonk Man all the time. You know, when he was here, he was fantastic. We had him in for 4 days. The first time we brought him in, we've had him a few times, but the first time, 4 days with a honky tonk.
Four days of the honky tonk.
Yeah, we had him in Winnipeg.
Sounds
we
took like
him
too
to
much.
I need a camera on that.
You know what? We should have videotaped it and had a documentary, but he tells you stories. I mean, he was great, but you know, and we've had TNA guys and Ring of Honor guys, and they've all been awesome. AJ Styles, and we had him, at, you know, he's huge right now in New Japan, but mm-hmm. AJ Styles was big at the time we brought him in too. He was the big thing on the indie scene, really. And he worked for TNA, and we put him in the ring with Kenny Omega, and it was amazing. And AJ Styles was the guy I just casually said to him, you know, here's what I have planned. Like, would you put over Kenny, lose to Kenny tonight? He goes, he thought for a second and said, you know, can it be a slide over? Which means, the finish would be, instead of it being like knock him out 1, 2, 3, it would be like a roll up, something like that. And I said, any finish you want, if you'll put him over. And he was so giving. And he said, sure, absolutely. And then they had 25 minutes of this match where, you know, AJ Styles didn't know Kenny at the time, comes to little Winnipeg, and he just goes out there, and you can see them as they're wrestling.
They're working on the fly.
They're working on the fly. But also AJ Styles, as he's wrestling with Kenny, realizes that he's good. And then they just left everything out there and had this amazing match.
And now they work together in New Japan. They're both in the Bullet Club
they're
together.
They're both in the Bullet Club, yeah. So I was going to take credit for that, actually. I introduced that and started the Bullet Club.
You got some royalties? Or,
yeah, I should, so. Yeah.
I'm assuming it's in the form of merch. Or...
Yeah. The fact that Kenny comes to Winnipeg and still wrestles for me is definitely payment enough.
You told me a story before we started recording about an experience that didn't go so well. I don't know if you want to... say or
sure yeah well I yeah. mean people ask me about the Samoa Joe incident all the time, right?
Okay.
We had Samoa Joe was this massive star when we first brought him in. We brought him on the show with AJ Styles, and he wrestled in the middle of the show. Styles was the main event, so Samoa Joe wrestled Mike Angels and Antonio Scorpio, both guys who still wrestled for PCW, and we had 500 people crammed into this bar, like standing room only, way too many people for the bar. And when Samoa Joe came out that first time, the place was like literally shaking. And Joe was amazing. Had a great match. He was tending bar after the show. Like, he just went behind the bar and he's giving people drinks. And they're all free because Joe's just making drinks. And people, he'd say, what do you want? And somebody would order, you know, gin and tonic. He's like, where's a Ryan Coke? You know, but he was so much fun. And we brought him in a few months later and he wrestled Adam Knight. And again, he was great. He was so much fun. And then we brought him in a third time to wrestle Kenny Omega, and he had won the previous two matches. And so the whole idea was, now we bring him back. And he loses this close match to Kenny.
Okay.
And my plan in my mind was then he comes back to wrestle the one guy that beat him, which was Kenny. But I asked him if he'd lose to Kenny, and he got mad. And he said, you know, no, I'm a TNA guy. I can't lose to Kenny Omega. And I said, oh, okay, well, AJ Styles lost to him. And all these guys I brought in, like, they don't care about winning or losing. And I said, it's okay. It's no problem. But he took offense to it. So he was just in a bad mood now the rest of the night. And they had a fairly bad match. It was a short match, and I was really disappointed in it. And he didn't want to hang out with the fans after, like none of that. Right?
How did you book the finish?
At that point, I said, well, you know, whatever, you can beat Kenny. And then because it's Kenny, Kenny just comes up with whatever finishes he wants, right? I leave it up to those guys. When it comes to something like that, I frame a general idea, and then they come up with the details. And I can't remember what the finish was actually, but it was Samoa Joe winning. And I was so upset watching it. And the fans knew, because our fans came to expect, you know, especially on a big show, they know the wrestling, if nothing else, is going to be good. The wrestling is going to be awesome. And so they were disappointed. And so I wrote a blog, actually, which was just really intended for our fans to say, you know what, here's what happened. Joe was a jerk and screw him, yada, yada. But yeah,
you need to say what the title of the blog
was. It was Samoa Joe can go fuck himself.
Okay? So, yeah, you got to lay it out there.
It's like you don't even need to read the content of it.
No. Yeah.
But it got sent.
It was just a title, and that's it.
It got sent all over. And, you know, Bill Behrens, who was the third-party booker for TNA at the time, and he's booked for all over. He emailed me and was like, what are you thinking? And he was just taunting me, calling me names. And then he realized I hadn't sent the check yet. So then he was just, you know, but it went all over the place, and people were talking about it. But ultimately, like I said at the time, it wasn't like I was trying to be disrespectful to Joe. It was just sort of saying to our fans, you know, sort of that rah-rah thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Joe was a jerk last night. Well, screw him, you know, because, you know, we'll come together and screw him. That wasn't PCW's way, you know. And
I'm assuming he hasn't been back.
No, no. That was probably the most famous thing I've ever done in wrestling, actually, was telling Samoa Joe to go fuck himself.
your fans, you talk about your fans. I went to the show that you did, that you put on in January you've got a pretty rowdy, loyal fan base. And the ring is, it's at doubles and, the ring is on the dance floor.
Yeah.
And, the fans just stand like right all around it, like congregated, and they are loud and they love it.
Yeah. And I love the venue like that. At the Palladium Stratosphere, the Lid, when we had shows, same thing. It was on the dance floor. So our crowd is really close. It's intimate. We ran Dylan's on Pembina Highway. Same thing. They're close in doubles, which is a great venue. The fans are really close. And I like that. It's very intimate. You're working very close. And the wrestlers know they've got to be, you know, there's a lot of realism in what they do because the fans are sitting right inches there. Away yeah. from you, right? So you better make sure it looks really good. And our fans are amazing. And we give them, you know, there's a time, wrestling goes up and down. And there was a time a few years ago where it was really down. And we made the decision, because we had really good wrestlers on our show, those are the guys we were going to push. They were called junior heavyweights at the time, like Kenny Omega and Mantolo and Ross Skills and Chad Tatum and Ryan Wood. And these guys, they were all so good. And we said, no, these should be the main event guys. And that is the sort of the wrestling we put on. And so we started attracting those hardcore fans that wanted to watch, you know, pure wrestling, not just guys who watch it on TV on Monday night and occasionally come to a show. But the ones that really wanted to see that really top quality wrestling that you not necessarily are going to see.
In North America.
In North America. Because a lot of those guys, they watch tapes from Japan and, you know, they wanted to be that those kind of wrestlers, right? And that's the kind of wrestling we tried to put on. And we did, you know, lucky for us, generate this great fan following. And those fans are amazing.
What's your most, what's the moment as a booker that you're the most proud of?
Oh, that's a good question. It's hard to think of a show that I'd be more proud of than that one with Eddie Guerrero. But that really wasn't, like, my fingerprints weren't really on that show because I was so new. But I think maybe the last show we did at the Lid, which had been the Palladium, because we didn't know the Lid was closing until like a week before. And so I had a week's notice to do like our last show. And we didn't know if we were going to keep doing it. And we packed the place. And had wrestlers from all over, all the competing promotions that everybody hates everybody, but they all came out to be a part of it. And the guys ribbed me and put me, unbeknownst to me, into the Rumble at the end.
Okay.
You know, I had been drinking all show because, you know, I'm having drinks with everybody, right? I'd see somebody I hadn't seen in a long time. So like, let's have a drink. So I was pretty, by the time we got to the end, like 4 hours later, I was hammered and, suddenly music starts playing. That I didn't even recognize was like my music. And somebody's like, that's you, you're in there. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And everybody's looking at me, you know, the place is packed, they're looking at me. And so I'm like, that's it, you know, so now I'm taking off.
They all know who, like at that point, when the music hits, they know who's coming, right?
Yeah. The announcer's going, Andrew Shellcross is in there. So I went out and then what they did is they had planned a finish where they would all dump out of the ring and I'd win. And so the pride and just, having the guys do something for me like that really meant a lot to me.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. If you were booking, and again, I think your passion is right now with wrestling in Japan and sort of a different style here. But of course, a lot of people here are most familiar with WWE, maybe TNA. If you were booking in North America, what would you change about what they do at this point?
Like, I watch WWE, of course, like, probably just about everybody else who watches any kind of wrestling. And I don't really like it. It's not as entertaining as it should be. And I think part of it is that because they're the only place in town really to wrestle for in North America, that they make you pay your dues in a way that you shouldn't really have to. Like, when they were battling WCW, if you were a good talent, you got a push and they gave you that opportunity. And it's very scripted now. It's too scripted. So what I would change is I'd bring out their natural personalities more. And if I saw somebody that was a good talent, then they would be the one. Like Dean Ambrose is a great talent, but he's not the guy that they picked to be the next big guy. Roman Reigns is.
Mm-hmm.
So Dean Ambrose does this thing here and it's okay, but he's never going to have that rocket, you know, strapped to his back and push because he's not the guy. Whereas Roman Reigns, who's not even getting the reaction they want, he gets the push no matter what because he's the guy that they've decided is going to be the guy. And they always say they listen to their fans, but they don't. You know, they don't listen to their fans. They want the fans to change their mind and love who they're pushing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would change how it's scripted. Don't script it as much. Let people have their own personalities. And I think that when you're in wrestling, there's a habit of getting too much in that bubble where you forget how you felt as a fan watching. And I always try to think of if a fan is in the third row, will they like what's happening? Will they like the surprise? Do they wish it was somebody else? Like there's been guys that piss me off.
Yeah.
But I know the fans want that guy to wrestle in the main event tonight, and they want him to win, or they want him to be a champion. And so I could say, hey, you know what? You pissed me off. No, you're losing to this guy, you're losing to that guy, and you're never going to win another match. But that's not good for the show, because it's not good for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think WWE doesn't do that enough. They don't give the fans what they know the fans will want.
I'm going to ask a question to both of you. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Mine's super easy, I guess. Like, currently alive would be Kenny Omega, because, you know, I started watching local wrestling in 2002, and that's when I first saw him. I just knew that something amazing would happen for him, and it has.
What did you see?
There's just something about him. He's just so fucking talented. Like, even before he made it this big, like, you saw it yourself, you know?
I didn't even like him when I first saw him.
He
wrestled for Top Rope, and he was 17 at the time.
Well, skinny at that point.
No, he was in a bar, and so what happened at Top Rope, they'd let these 17-year-olds wrestle in a bar when you weren't allowed to be 17 in the bar.
Yeah.
So then somebody else, a competitor, then tells the liquor commission, and they come down hunting for these guys. So I knew about Kenny was he shouldn't have been wrestling, right? And then I remember, like, oh, that jerk, he's always trying to sneak in. But then I saw him, I remember what it was, he did a moonsault off a bar railing outside the ring onto somebody, and I thought, holy shit, that kid is talented.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, a moonsault is basically a backflip onto someone.
Onto someone, yeah.
That's how I knew he was good. But I think, like, Kenny Omega is an easy answer. Eddie Guerrero would be my choice as a guy, as a big name. You know, everybody loves Ric Flair, of course, too, but having met Eddie, there's nobody like him.
We're talking about, like, as a child to adulthood,
even,
you know, growing up, I was a big Shawn Michaels fan.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie. He's talented.
Even when he was a dick?
Even when he was a dick, and even when he lost his smile. But the problem was, when I was 17 or 18, he had an autograph signing here in Winnipeg. So, of course, I'm fucking marking out. This is amazing, right? Yeah. Like, this is my childhood dream. This is my boyhood dream come true. Like, I won the belt, right? Went for the autograph session, and I guess this was before he found Jesus.
Yeah.
Because he showed up late, sunglasses indoors. This was at the old stadium. Sunglasses indoors. And I'm like, Sean, I'm a huge fan of yours. Whatever. Sign. Toss. I'm like,
this is probably, I'm thinking 1995, 96, 97?
No, this was in 2001 or 2002.
Oh, so when the in-between phase, when he wasn't active.
Wasn't active, yeah. He hadn't found Jesus, all this shit. And it crushed my heart.
So Eddie, I mean, you hear tons of great things about Eddie, so it's nice that someone that's actually worked with him can say the same thing.
Fantastic. And locally, I mean, Kenny, for sure, I worked with so many great guys locally, like Mentolo.
Mentolo's amazing. Yeah.
Mentolo's been fantastic. He's such a great wrestler, and he's a guy that's given me a lot of advice and guidance over the years as well. And there's a guy named Ross Skills who was actually, when I became Booker at PCW, we immediately put the belt on Kenny, but then quickly flipped it to Ross Skills, who everybody had thought of as just this little junior heavyweight guy, but he was an amazing wrestler. And he was a guy that sort of our detractors said, oh, he has no charisma. Well, this guy had so much charisma. He just needed that opportunity. And, I mean, his finishing move was a spinning toe hold.
But he would scream during it.
He took it from Japan, and he would scream to it. And it became the most popular move in Winnipeg. It was huge. And we became really, really good friends as well. Very, very smart guy. The only guy I ever actually, in wrestling, was willing to say, why don't you take over booking PCW? Because he was so smart.
Are you going to pass it on one day, or have you still got the passion?
There's been times where I've tried... But you always get pulled back
in. The Godfather. They pulled me back
in. True. You always get pulled back in, and it's hard to leave. Like, if I ever left, it would be, we'd have probably one final show, and it would be the end. I probably wouldn't tell anybody. You wouldn't even know it was the final show until I took the money and ran out the front door with it, and nobody ever saw me again. Because you gotta make a clean break, or you'll always be back in. So I don't think, I'll probably never quit.
But even at that, we've already booked a show for when you die. And your ashes get used.
Yes, I've left explicit instructions.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
When I die, because she thinks it's a joke, but when I die, at least some of my ashes are to be used. I want them to use it at an angle. They can do a who shot me angle if they want.
So Dallas.
I don't care. Use me. You can try to do a seance, have a reanimated corpse. Like, you can do any sleazy thing you want surrounding my death, but then carry my ashes around, and I want them thrown in somebody's face at a critical moment of a big main event title match so that it's historic in the history of the promotion. So
I'll remember that. I don't know if I'm going to outlive you too, but
we need to have at least three shows then for the lead up.
The lead up?
Ashes being thrown. Yeah. Yeah, and solving who murdered you.
If I knew I was dying, I would tape a whole bunch of stuff they could use after the fact.
I've been poisoned slowly over months.
Very Dallas-like.
Just one thing that I wanted to mention. You asked before one of Andrew's favorite parts of promoting and everything else like that. For me as a fan, being a fan PCW since 02, my favorite, and I mean it was a little smarkish, but still, moment was when Andrew took over booking on his own. Davidson had left at that point, and you weren't too sure what you were going to do, and you booked a hell of a show. That's when Kenny got the title.
Yes, in 2003. So Mike, like I said, Mike Davidson, I started it, and he was from 2002 until I think it was August of 2003 was when, we had different visions at that point, and he wanted to go do his own thing. So he left, and I was very unsure of whether or not I could continue. Would anybody listen to me? Would the guys follow me into battle? And actually, the first email I got back was Kenny Omega's. I sent an email out to the boys, and Kenny wrote me back and said, of course we're going to keep doing this. You know, he's, this is how we should do it. I've got ideas. And if we frame it like this, it doesn't matter what those guys do. And he was very grounding in whenever there's competition. Mike ran competition to us, but Kenny would be the one that would say, don't worry about that. Don't think about what they're doing. Who cares what they're doing? Because I'm going to wrestle Raw Skills tonight. So you know what? It's going to be the best match of any wrestling in Winnipeg. So don't worry about it.
And it was.
It always was.
Well, congratulations. I mean, my friend used to work at Domo, and he would work for 8 hours overnight, and there'd be no car. So all he would do is book for our backyard wrestling promotion, and we could barely keep that shit together. So I'm very impressed that you can book
for
a show.
Long, yeah.
And then continue on and keep storylines straight. And
you know, what's crazy. That's the thing I love the most is the details. Like I'll have a match, let's say a match in 2 weeks from now that I could write out a preview for it where something that happened on a show in April of 2004 somehow impacts this match that we're doing in 2015.
And we have a couple of fans that'll remember that far back.
Oh yeah.
Everything means something, which is important.
To me, that's a big thing. Everything has to mean something. It has to make sense and not just make sense from last show. It should make sense from 6 years ago when you viciously attacked that guy. And why are you teaming now? There has to be a reason for that, right?
So, before we, sign off with this portion of the interview, you're the promoter. You've got a show coming up. Let's,
plug it.
Talk me into the doors.
Premier Championship Wrestling, 13th Anniversary Spectacular. Tickets are only $15, and the show is going to be Saturday, February 28th at Doubles Fun Club. It's 18+. There's great food, great drinks. Come on down and check it out. Starts at 9 o'clock. Doors open about 8 o'clock. But it's going to be fantastic. Kenny Omega will be on the show. He'll be wrestling Mentalo.
Okay.
So you can say these are the two best wrestlers to come out of Winnipeg in 20 years. Best two guys. They'll be wrestling each other. Mike Angels, who local fans will know, he's a big favorite. He's coming in for the first time in a year. We've got guys from High Impact Wrestling in Saskatchewan coming in. We've got 9 or 10 matches planned right now. So it's going to be a long, great, awesome night of wrestling. If you only see one wrestling show in Winnipeg this year, this is the show you want to see. If you're not a fan of wrestling, come see this show because you will be a fan of wrestling after this show.
I think you've done it. I'll see you there.
Awesome. Good.
All right. Thank you very much. It's Andrew, PCW Andrew on Twitter, and the wrestling promotion has a Twitter site as well, correct?
PCW Action and PCW Legacy, both on Twitter, and Facebook, PCW Action. And the Facebook page, PCW Action, you can check that out, has all of our information.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So again, that was PCW Andrew talking about the business of promoting professional wrestling here in Winnipeg. We spoke at length off the air too, probably for over an hour. Just so many great stories about the personalities that he's met in what I feel is a very fascinating business, as you could probably tell from the interview. Again, PCW's 13th anniversary show is on Saturday, February 28th at Doubles Fun Club. Bell is at 9 p.m., so you should probably show up around, 8:30. It's $15 to get in, and the show is going to be headlined by New Japan Pro Wrestling superstar Kenny Omega, who got his start here in Winnipeg and has gone on to do a lot of great work. If you get a chance, if you're at all a pro wrestling fan or have any interest in pro wrestling whatsoever, go to YouTube and look up some of Kenny Omega's matches. They are fantastic. The Beyond the Handle podcast, it can be found in a number of different places. We are on Twitter at Beyond the Handle. You can also find the show on Facebook now. Just go to Facebook and search for Beyond the Handle, and we should pop up there for you. If you have any feedback for me, or if you have any recommendations for guests, or if you're interested in being a guest yourself, you can email me at beyondthehandle@gmail.com or reach out on Twitter, and I would be happy to hear from you. So let's get back into the show now. We are going to talk with Skinartia, who you heard a little bit during the conversation with PCW Andrew, but we're going to shift our attention over to her. And again, she's going to talk to us about growing up in a small town, and then we get into a discussion about the nude modeling scene here in Winnipeg, which is quite interesting, and kind of take it from there. And again, I end up steering the conversation back to pro wrestling because, why talk about nude modeling when you can talk about pro wrestling with people that are really interested in it, right? Anyways, it was a great conversation, and I hope that you enjoy it. This is Skinartia speaking with me on Beyond the Handle. Okay, so we're back here with part two of the Beyond the Handle podcast, episode two, after talking and at length and actually off air as well about wrestling for quite a bit of time, finally decided that we should move on to the second part of the discussion. So I've got Skinartia from Twitter here. Yes. I think we became friends because of wrestling.
I think it was a combination of wrestling and the municipal election.
Was it?
Yep. I think we both voted for our friend, Robert Falcon Ouellette.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm assuming you voted for him.
I did. I'm willing to admit it.
There you go.
Yeah, yes. I totally did.
I think it was around that time. This is the power of the hashtag. It brings people together.
And the funny thing is, I think, we've talked about wrestling all together, and what we're going to start getting into as well is quite a bit of a stretch. Yeah, quite a bit different from municipal politics.
Right.
But so what's the story behind the Skinartia Twitter handle?
So the handle came about when I was graduating from high school. I grew up in a small town, and, I had the same teachers from when I was wee all the way through. I, in my graduating class of, 20, was the only one that had tattoos at that point. And, we had taken a school trip, or a few of us, to Greece, which was amazing. We were in Athens, blah, blah, blah. So my one teacher for our graduation class said that my Greek goddess name would be Skinartia. And mm-hmm. I had just had a fresh tattoo that day or the day before mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it seemed to make sense because I've only added several more tattoos since then.
and what was it like being like the tattooed person in a small town?
It was interesting. By the time I actually went for my graduation, I had already moved to Winnipeg. I wrote my last exam, and I'll use the word literally correctly here. I literally moved into Winnipeg the following day. I didn't even wait to see if I passed or not. I moved to Winnipeg, so I had to go back out to buttfuck town for graduation.
I thought you said you weren't going to say the name of the
town. Oh, sorry. Wipe that from your memory of buttfuck Manitoba. Yeah. And no one had tattoos. And I mean, at that point, I only had, I think, three. That sounds right. And, some of my high school friends were like, oh, you shouldn't get more. It's inappropriate for women or whatever. So, of course, I'm a rebel, and that means I just get more.
And what year did you move to Winnipeg?
That would have been in 2002.
Okay. And is that where you and Andrew met around then, or was that?
Andrew and I met just about less than a year later in 03.
Through wrestling?
Through wrestling.
You went to a show?
I went to a show, Andrew was there. I guess he thought fancy things about me. And we went on a date, and the rest is history.
It's very romantic wrestling, eh?
I know. Wrestling brings people together.
So something else that you got into at some point after moving to Winnipeg.
Yes.
What is CherryStems.com?
CherryStems.com is, surprise, surprise, Winnipeg has something like this, a local nude modeling website. We have models from outside of Winnipeg and Manitoba now, but initially it was very grassroots of just Winnipeg-based models. And now, you know, we have some models from San Francisco, Vancouver, Montreal, so on and so forth, and we're slowly adding more.
And did you join after the site had been established, or did you help, or did you kind of...
No, start? The site was already established by then. I think I got into it in 2010. It's shocking now to think it's been 5 years, but okay. It had been up and running for, I think, a couple of years or so before then. It was still pretty low-key. And Kate, who is the owner, she's still running it, she'll admit to that it was maybe mildly creepy, messaged me of, could you get naked for my website?
Just out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. You know, it's one of those funny things that if, you know, some dude sent that to me, it'd be fuck off. But, you know, cute girl sends it. Well, let's talk details then.
All right. Just out of curiosity, what makes you more nervous, speaking on this podcast or modeling nude?
Speaking on this podcast.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
Yes. That may be surprising to people, but yes.
How much say do you have in, like, the content of the...
Everything.
The shoots? So, like, do you, like, we were talking again wrestling. Do you book it? Do you book the...
Yes, absolutely. I book it, basically. I get to choose which photographers I do or do not want to work with. I don't have to give a reason for which. If I want to work with them and they want to work with me, great. We go from there. A lot of the photographers prefer to have a theme storyline, if you will, for it. And one of our models goes so far as to even like storyboard. I want this shot, this shot, this shot. I don't give a fuck about that personally. I think it's amazing that she puts in that much time.
Does she actually draw the
art? Okay. And kudos to her. I don't have that kind of energy. I'm just like, this is kind of what I have in mind, and nudity ensues. Can we do that? Perfect. Let's do that. The models have a say of how much nudity, for example, I'll say cis women don't have to do entire nudity. As long as you're topless, that's fine. Okay. I think cis men, you don't have to show your penis, but you got to show your butt and chest. So, yeah.
And for those of us that are uneducated, cis means?
Cis means you identify with the gender that you were born into or assigned to at birth. Yes.
What kind of reactions have you gotten when people hear that you're a part of this site?
I think your reaction when you saw me post about it was, what?
Well, you were like, I forget what you said, but you mentioned, I don't even remember what you said, but it was like, wait a second, what now?
Yeah,
we were talking about...
Time to get naked for the internet.
We were talking about Macho Man, and then you're like, I'm going to get naked. And it's like, wait a second, what? You hear the record scratch?
Yeah, basically, yes. So... Some people in my life, I don't share this part of my life with, and it's not that I'm ashamed or anything else like that. It's just I feel for their benefit, it's best that they not. Other people, when they find out about it, recently I had lunch with, funny enough, back to high school, my high school grad date. I had lunch with her, and at the end of it, I kind of just threw it out there just to see, and her reaction was sort of, oh... Okay, I have to go now.
Really?
And that was, I like, excuse me? Like, are you okay? Like, are you offended or upset? No, I just have to go now. So I made sure to touch base with her after a couple of days of like, I hope I didn't startle you with this or anything. She was fine. She was just surprised.
And you say that it's, you know, like you don't share it with everybody, but...
And yet it's now, on the, I mean, yet on it's the on Twitter.
Yeah, it's on the Twitter. You know, like I mean... I didn't put two and two together, and then you said it, and I was like, oh,
so
okay.
I guess by that what I mean is, okay, so family members, certain family members, they don't need to know that, you know. So, for example, I have family on Facebook. Facebook is that, and they can be sheltered from that, whereas Twitter is where I could be more honest and open up, this is what I do, and I'm cool with that. If you're cool with that, great. If you're not, don't look. Good enough, right?
Mm-hmm. Your parents?
No. I think that would be a slightly weird conversation. My mom would be more of along the lines of, you know, thinking further down the road. Well, what if you suddenly want to get into politics or some shit like this? And I'd have to be like, Mom, I don't. But if I did, I would own up to it, you know? Whereas with my dad, I think he would just be more, you know, fatherly, worried sense.
I honestly think that, you know, people that get into politics, because, like, I haven't done nude modeling. Right. I don't know why. Like, yeah, look at me.
You could on our site if you want to send in an application.
But you know, like, obviously, like, I've said enough shit online and there's enough of my content out there that's like, Jesus, like, what would happen if I ran for politics? People would, because people want to pull up your history, right? And I don't know why more people just don't say, like, fuck it. Like,
you know.
Like, but that's the way it's going now, though, right? Because people who are in politics or anything like that now, there was no Twitter and Facebook when they were younger. Yep. Yeah. And by the time Twitter and Facebook came around, they would have thought about those things. But the people coming up now, they grew up with this, right? They grew up with Twitter and Facebook and social media. So, so really, it's like you said, right? They wouldn't care about that kind of stuff anymore because it's going to be out there. So people who are going to be running for politics 10, 15, 20 years from now, everybody's going to have a history.
Yeah, it's just like this is what it is, guys. And if you can't live up to it, like, because you can't live that fake life with everything that's out there now.
No, and I mean, you can't live a fake life with, you know, okay, in 10 years, I might be doing this. So I have to engage in life this way now, just in case later on. And I mean, you know, I guess the fallback too is if in 10 years or something, you change your mind and decide to do something and people want to throw in your face of, well, you said this. You know what? People change on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Opinions you have now may not be ones you had 3, 5, 10 years ago. That's the nature of living. And if you're a robot and you have the same opinions you did 10 years ago, well, I don't know what to tell you.
I wouldn't have, like, there's no way 15 years ago I would have voted for Falcon Ouellette.
And that's
there's
just
no
it.
Way I would have done it.
Exactly. You
and
know?
If you saw nude photos of him, would you still vote for him?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I would have been more likely to vote
I was
going to
say,
him.
Like.
Exactly. I would have been, like, good for you would've. For owning up to your body confidence and doing that. And I had this conversation with one of the other Cherry Stems models. Her name is Rogue. She's on Twitter. She's on Facebook as well, because she has some interest in politics. And, you know, I said, well, what if, right? And her thing is, I would own up to it and just, you know, we live in a culture that is not always the most body positive, sex positive. She's, you know, a big girl is the other thing. People tend to be like, oh, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
She loves herself. She's beautiful. She has every right to do that. And she would own up to that. And she said, quite frankly, I would probably put it as part of my platform. And I said, well, come on, I would vote for someone like that. You know what I mean? Like,
even if it's not something that you're into personally, just the fact that it's honest.
Exactly.
And it's real. Like,
and that's just it. And that's absolutely what part of my appeal to Cherry Stems was not just, you know, at one point Suicide Girls was really just a really alternative form of modeling. These beautiful women that maybe had like a punky look, funky colored hair, lots of tattoos and piercings, but in different body shapes, and that was great. And now, while they still have the tattoos and the hair color and blah blah blah, it's very thin, big tits, da da da. They've cookie cuttered themselves.
Yeah.
I'm gonna verb that one. they cookie cut themselves into that. Whereas Cherry Stems, you know, you can have an alternative look. You could not have an alternative look. You could be skinny. You don't have to be skinny. You could be man, woman, trans, gender neutral, whatever you want to be. And as long as you're being honest to yourself, awesome. Put it out there.
So you said this started in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask this, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but you two are dating at the time.
Yes.
What's the conversation like when you're considering this?
So there's this site, and I was asked to be on it. I would be naked. What do you think?
I think I said what about, like, they're there forever.
Yeah.
You know, but she does what she wants. It's her life.
Yeah.
Okay. I
We're
just
pretty
almost,
supportive.
I'm just thinking, like, you could probably fire back and say, well, you work with guys in their underwear all the
true.
Time.
It's true. And rubbing up on each other.
Yeah. Not me, though.
No, but you do. Yeah, exactly. No, there was never any... There wasn't any awkward conversation or like, oh, I need to think about this from either of us. He's entirely supportive. I'm not doing something that is going to harm me or put me in harm's way. So why not, right? But I understand that, you know, there are some models that we've had that, you know, they've got into a relationship. Now, the girlfriend doesn't want me doing that. Okay, fair enough. But it's already out there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't undo what's already been done. You know, you don't have some sort of special secret body that only one person can or should.
Like, you have to be, you have to be willing to live with it at that point.
Exactly. And that's just it. You know, like, we were talking about thinking about in the long term.
Yeah.
Okay, that means your relationships, too, that may come up. And if someone finds out, you know, are you going to be like that? I'm so awkward and uncomfortable about it, and I don't want to talk about it. Or are you just going to be like, yeah, I did that, and that's that.
What do you do if that phone call comes one day and it's mom or dad and they're like, so I was browsing online. I already think one of the things I'd be like, what were you looking for?
Exactly. But exactly. So it's funny you say that because last week, apparently my sister discovered Twitter and I saw she added me on it and I'm like, nope, block. And I preemptively, sorry, my brother-in-law, if he's listening, I preemptively blocked him too. I'm like, I don't want to deal with this. This isn't a conversation I want to have. Or if I do want to have it, this isn't the way I want it to happen.
Yeah. This site, like, does it make money? Do you?
No, it's volunteer for the models and the photographers. And any money generated by the site goes to not-for-profits after expenses of running the site.
So go look at Naked People for a Good Cause?
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to think of examples. I know at one point years ago, there was a donation made to Osborne House. I think there has been to, sorry, Kate, if you're listening, am I wrong? I think to Sage House as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we try to keep it to not-for-profits that are, say, you know, either empowering to certain genders or sex positive, that sort of thing.
Okay. You also mentioned another event, and you've said you're not as familiar, but you're
I'm willing to throw it out there. Yeah.
Sex Geekdom Winnipeg.
Yes.
What is this?
Sex Geekdom Winnipeg is being put on by a couple of people from Cherry Stems. That would be Kate, who owns and operates Cherry Stems, as well as B, who is one of the photographers. And they are, I think they're hoping to have it as a monthly meetup. Unfortunately, I've missed, they had one last month and this month, and I've had to miss both. They're monthly meetups to hang out with other people that are like-minded of just, like, really sex positive, even sort of educational, like, hey, have you learned the latest in this or that? And people getting together without shame and just openly talking about their sexuality and their experiences, because nowadays there's still a lot of taboo around it. You know, you have those friends where you might be like, hey, you know, I have this crazy sex story, let me tell you about it. And that's all well and good, but sometimes it's a lot more fun to share it with more people. So I think that's kind of part of the idea of this is, like, you know, learn as well as share.
So people that are listening out there, and so don't deny it, there's some of you that are like, okay, what how would I go about participating in this?
Facebook, if you do a search for Sex Geekdom Winnipeg, there's a group on there. I believe it's probably, like, private, so then you have to accept it. Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. And then when there are monthly events, they post the event in there and we'll invite people and you can invite your own. They have them at local places. I think the last one was
like
at
Sal's.
Yeah, at Sal's. No, I'm just kidding. At Moz, okay. I think was the last one, but I, you know, Sal's would be great. Really keep it local, right?
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned when I put a questionnaire out to you and I asked everybody that comes on the show if they can recommend other people to speak with.
Right.
So you gave me a couple of names.
Yep.
And then you mentioned that they're involved in porn.
Right.
So that's something, like, I mean, I think of porn in Winnipeg, I think, like, someone grabs their iPhone and films something.
Everyone's a porn star now,
and that's
right?
And that's the extent of it. Is there something professional in this city?
Yes, there is. There is an offshoot of Cherry Stems coming out, I believe, next month called Sine Sinclair, and that will be the hardcore porn site.
okay.
I saw the trailer for it and it looks like it's going to be really great.
Is it better than the new Star Wars trailer?
Likely. Yes. I don't want to put,
yes, it is.
I don't want to put it over too hard or anything, yeah. But it is no big deal. There is a Twitter account for Sine Sinclair And the different performers that I've seen involved in it, there are trans people, gender neutral people, cis people. So there's a little bit of everything for everyone in it. And it's just people just genuinely enjoying themselves. So it's going to be really great. I'm looking forward to when that comes out.
Is it the same idea they're going to put the proceeds towards?
No, this one I don't know about.
This one's me to make some money?
This one, I think, will be hoping to make some money. So I can't say too much on that, but I would say it's not along quite the same lines as Cherry Sims in that respect, but still.
I have a very important question that I've wanted to ask for a very long time.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to do it here on the air.
I'm so scared.
After everything that we've been talking about. What's it like having a wrestling ring in your garage?
It's pretty great until one time I was pulling the car in and a ring post fell on the car.
Okay, so the hazards of...
There are hazards and I didn't want to deal with it and I just kept backing out of the garage. He's like, why is there a post on the floor? I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
Why is the car all scratched up?
Put two and two together?
Yeah.
It takes up a lot of room too, but... convenient. It's convenient having a big garage.
And just so people know, the ring is not actually fully set up in the garage. You have to take that shit down. Otherwise, there would be nowhere to park in there.
I would think so. That would be a fun garage.
Exactly. You know, at that point, then we would have a training studio. And we could maybe shoot porn in it at that point, too. There we go.
You know, I'm just all of a sudden like cross promotion.
Exactly. See,
as a wrestling booker, I'm sure that you probably cross promotion.
It's a good idea. I hadn't actually thought of that, but that's a good idea.
I can see the wheels churning at this point. So maybe.
Do you think that there is a correlation between women that are interested in nude modeling, like just kind of putting themselves out there, and being into wrestling?
As in them being interested in wrestling, or as in wrestling on its own kind of thing?
I think into like actually participating in the.
I would say yes, because it's very difficult to get girls involved in wrestling. But in the past, when there has been, usually the question comes up: how much do we have to pay you for you to take your top off on the show? Especially coming out of the Attitude Era, that was the big thing, right?
Yeah,
and the girls are always presented in.
They're pretty highly sexualized,
yeah.
You know, and cause you can audience, take that either way. Either that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Your audience is mostly men,
yeah.
So that's you're giving them sort of what they want. But we haven't had a lot of women around. I've been lucky to book some really good female wrestlers, like Sarah Stock, who wrestles in Mexico and has wrestled for TNA. She's really, really good. So she wrestled for us. So she was not presented in a sexualized way at all. She was presented as a legitimate athlete.
Yeah.
But you know, you always have that the women being topless. So I think that there's a crossover. Because if you're creative like that, it's all about creativity, right?
Yep.
If you're creative like that, then you're interested in creativity in multiple forms.
Yeah.
How would you like to see women presented in wrestling?
I think that if there was more of an option of you don't have to be highly sexualized versus the only way you're going to get any interest or get any booked is by being ridiculously sexualized. I would hope that there would be more of a gray area. And it's disappointing that there's not. You know, we were talking about China off air.
Yeah.
I mean, even when she was originally booked, she was still kind of sexualized. And then, you know, she got the implants out of pressure and the various other surgeries that followed that. Would she have wanted that for herself? You know what? Maybe she eventually did. It's hard to say. But was she pressured into it? Fuck, we all know she was.
And she certainly didn't need it. Like, she had something that you, no one else has,
exactly.
Which is what's special
talented.
In wrestling.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you brought in this woman who was incredibly jacked. Like, she was in great shape and everything else like that. That in itself was its own gimmick. You didn't have to slap some fake tits on her. If she wanted to, I support that. But I get the impression there was pressure to do so. And a lot of women, I'm sure, involved in wrestling have that same thing of pressure to be sexual, whether they want it or not.
We were talking about the WWE Network as well. And one thing that I noticed in the 80s pay-per-views is they have the women's matches on there.
Mm.
And they don't...
Glow wrestling?
No, this even in WWE, they put them out there and it's like they're not, you know, they're not presented. In, like, they're basically not hired because they're models,
yes.
Right? They're hired because they're well trained and they're great athletes,
and
the quality is like night and day. They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, Moolah was like 50 wrestling, right? So she wasn't really presented in a sexualized way. But Wendy Richter, Alundra Blaze, Medusa Michelli was probably the first one that because she was very attractive that they presented a little bit in that way, but only because she happened to be an athlete who also happened to be attractive. Right. And I think they're starting to get away from that even now a little bit. AJ Lee, who's not the, you know, blonde haired plastic Barbie doll look, Paige, same thing. And they're both very good wrestlers. So I think that they're starting to see they can present women differently than just the dumb blonde plastic.
They're doing it a lot on their developmental stage,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Triple H's influence, I think, is more about women can be athletes. You know, Ric Flair's daughter is a phenomenal athlete and she's attractive, but that's not how she's being presented at all. Right. So,
imagine this is weird to imagine. I'm 18 years old.
Sure.
Female.
Okay.
And I'm interested in getting involved in, or I'm maybe not totally interested. I don't know exactly what
You're
I
curious?
Want, but I'm curious about it.
Sure.
What's your advice for all my 18-year-old and up female listeners? Because I know my audience.
This is your demographic. You know, and we do take male models as well. We take any gender neutral, otherwise everybody. So 18-year-old you, let's sit down and have a chat. Do you actually... Are you very confident in yourself? And why are you doing this? And some people do this as a means to build confidence. I honestly don't have that much confidence, but I think if I put this out there and I get some positive feedback from it, this will help my confidence. Honestly, there's nothing wrong with that as far as I'm concerned, unless you're doing it in a super harmful way. But I would say take the time to actually think about this and if this is what you want. And if it is what you want, don't go to some shady guy's basement.
That's pretty good advice.
That's pretty good life advice, I think, in general. Don't go to a shady guy's basement. Unfortunately, there are some photographers out there in the world that will try to take advantage of models. And I myself had been in a position like that. It's not a fun position to be in, and it can just wreak havoc on your self-esteem. So, you know, what I like with Cherry Stems is all our photographers are vouched for. They're awesome. If you don't want to follow through with something, you can say stop at any point. Consent, consent, consent. Big fucking deal. Consent is huge. So we have a lot of info on our site about how to sign up, this and that. And normally in your first shoot, someone will kind of do some hand-holding with you, either if it's one of the models or Kate herself will attend so that, you know, you're not just, okay, here you go with this photographer that you just met right now. Go get naked and take pictures. There's none of that. It's very, like, at your pace and as you want to, which is a lot better than the skeevy guy basement.
Sounds like... I would think so.
Yeah.
It's funny because it should be obvious, but I know that it exists. And
it
so clearly it may not be.
It may not be, you know. So if you find yourself, you're like, oh, I'm not so sure. Trust your gut instinct, you know. If you're getting yourself in a position where it's like, I'm not sure where this is going or I'm not okay with this, don't be afraid to say, no, I'm done, and leave. Just fucking walk out. There's nothing wrong with that. And if that person gets butthurt, they can go fuck themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, quite frankly.
I think we've reached a good point to
to wrap it up
on a high note.
Yes.
So the site again is?
cherrystems.com.
And Sex Geekdom Winnipeg.
Sex Geekdom Winnipeg. If you do a search for that on Facebook, Kate and B will be happy because there's too many Bs there to set you up and get you involved with that. We have some rules outlined of what Sex Geekdom is about, you know, kind of the no-no things and kind of like with yours, no hate speech, shit like that, you know. So it's good. Yeah. More body positivity in Winnipeg is really important, I think.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. Speaking
thank
with me, Skinartia on Twitter. And also, again, PCW Andrew. And so go check out cherrystems.com. Go see some live pro wrestling on the 28th of February.
You got it.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So again, that was Skinartia. We had a great conversation, and you should go to cherrystems.com and look at some naked people and give them some money because it goes to great causes around the city. along with Skinartia, we spoke with PCW Andrew. We talked about the PCW 13th anniversary show, and that is on Saturday, February 28th at Doubles Fun Club. Bell time is at 9 p.m., and it's $15 to get in. PCW, of course, is Premier Championship Wrestling. You can also look them up on Facebook. That is it for week two. Holy smokes. You can reach out to the show once again at Beyond the Handle on Twitter. You can look us up on Facebook at Beyond the Handle, and you can find us on iTunes at Beyond the Handle. And you can also email me if you're interested in participating in the show in any way. It's beyondthehandle@gmail.com. Gonna close the show with a great tune by a band called Pet Sun. They're from Hamilton, Ontario. I've been playing clips from this song over the course of the show, and now we're gonna hear the whole thing. You can find them on Bandcamp. Again, it's my opinion that Bandcamp is one of the best places to find new music. You can look up bands by genre. You can look them up by location. Many bands post their music for free downloads. Some of them you do have to pay, but prices are very good. You can get digital downloads. Bands sell their records, their tapes, their CDs. So go have a look at bandcamp.com. So again, thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to Garbage Hill Network for bringing us on to their network of great podcasts here in the city of Winnipeg. You can find them at garbagehillnetwork.com or at Garbage Hill on Twitter. Again, this has been the Beyond the Handle podcast. I'm Alan at Slip on Twitter, and we will see you in a week. Thanks.
I'm going away.